Alrighty, so this is episode 5 of the Broker Banter Podcast with George Moloss, the broker, and of course the econ professional Gareth Everett. And we're going to get right into it. We last filmed in Barcelona probably, 2 months ago now?
Yeah, month and a half.
Yeah. We did 4 episodes there. This is episode 5. And we've had some good reception. We got sponsored by Bupos. We're going to talk a bit about that in a second. Actually, let's talk about that now. Let's run the Bupos ad. Thanks, guys. So, of course, this episode is sponsored by Bupos. Bupos is an online business marketplace where you can find great online deals. We've been using it for some time now. And compared to some of the other marketplaces, it's giving us a really good range of businesses to look at. My personal favorite thing about it is it does some analysis. It makes some of the graphing just a lot easier to actually synthesize and look at. Now, a lot of the time, you're going to have to pull out P&Ls and do the analysis yourself, right? But doing that over many, many different businesses can be difficult, but they make that quite easy. There's a lot of insights that the marketplace provides. I love those. Makes it very easy to do that process. Now, of course, some of these businesses are also Bupos financeable. Some of them are not, though. However, if they are Bupos financeable, fantastic. Talk to the Bupos team. So if you are interested in learning a bit more about Bupos, take a look at their website, take a look at their marketplace, and let's get back to the podcast.
Okay, cool. So we're going to go through some updates as to what's happening in our lives, since, of course, we're active in the econ world and M&A world. Talk a bit about some news, and then we're going to go through some businesses. So I think you've done some more interesting stuff than me the last month or two. I've just been doing my same old thing.
I've been trying to keep busy. Overall, I'd say, like, it would be interesting to talk about, like, what is beginning to emerge, mm-hmm. I think, as trends. So overall in e-commerce, I think we're recording this now in August 2024.
Yeah.
I would say, broadly speaking, a more difficult time for 100%. Most e-commerce merchants, as far as I'm hearing in my world. Mm-hmm. I think overall the trend that's become interesting is, okay, going way back into the Wayback Time Machine for e-commerce, we had, like, Google SEO was kind of the beginning of how you were going to get discovered. And at the beginning, that was really cheap. And then it got really expensive. And Google Ads came out, and they were really cheap, and they got really expensive. Facebook Ads came out, and they were really cheap, and then broadly across all their platforms, got really expensive. And then TikTok Ads came out, and you think that that would follow the same trend line, but no, TikTok Ads came out, and they were just really expensive.
Yeah.
Right from the beginning. And I think what we're beginning to see in the industry writ large is my assumption is I don't think ads are coming back to affordability. As far as I can tell, there's no challenger platform on the horizon right now where we're going to see an affordable sort of ads market. And I think TikTok's pricing right out of the gates shows that to break into advertisers' wallets, you don't actually need to underprice that attention right away. Mm. So we begin to ask ourselves, like, where is the underpriced attention? As e-commerce merchants, most of what we have to do is marketing. We have to ask ourselves, where is the underpriced attention? I'm not actually convinced right now that it is in the platform's incentive to underprice ads attention. Where we're starting to see shifts on the back end of platforms is it's more expensive within that realm for businesses to advertise. But we're beginning to see personal accounts like creator, influencer, whatever you want to call it, accounts and publisher accounts are having really fantastic reach. Now, I think my overall kind of hypothesis, my theory, is that Instagram and YouTube, any social platform is going to have to begin reacting to the moves that TikTok Shops is making. So right now, again, we're August 2024, so hopefully this won't be dated too quickly, but TikTok Shops is actually performing really, really well for a subset of products, and what I'm going to call them, like, impulse purchase type products, and it's typically products from brands that beforehand had not been heard of before. They're mostly, like, newly launched, newly created brands. And I'm noticing if you go through kind of those, like, TikTok Shops analytics tools, that they're often, like, some time-bound descriptor and then outcome. So what I mean by that is, like, 2 shades whiter teeth in 14 days or less. Detox your gut in, or 30-day detox cleanse, something like that. Those seem to be the products that are performing really well, and they're often like $20 or less. So they're demographic appropriate for TikTok, as in they skew younger, and they're price appropriate thereby on the kind of $20 or less price point. And TikTok has implemented true social shopping, like you're purchasing those products within the platform. My overall take is that it's relatively an inevitability that Instagram and likely YouTube are going to need to go the exact same direction. There's going to need to be embedded shopping on both of those platforms.
Isn't that already in Instagram?
They're working on it, but it's like, it's not the same way. There's Instagram shops, but if you post on like a creator type account, there's no big flashing arrow pointing at this jersey that you're wearing, where I can go click that and within the app, purchase that, and then that order gets routed to the back end of a merchant's Shopify store, which is happening right now on TikTok. TikTok Shops facilitates that. That also currently in August 2024 doesn't exist on YouTube. And I, my overall take is it's going to be an inevitability that that those other platforms, namely Instagram and YouTube, will need to adapt to what the social shopping that TikTok is pushing, which effectively for merchants, it becomes a really interesting new paradigm. It's finally, you're getting like the affiliate-esque kind of environment that brands have craved for so long, because I as a brand can then say, okay, I'm gonna partner with these creators. I wanna pay them a 25% of revenue share when they drive a purchase. I know that the platform gets 10%. I've got my, you know, my retargeting budget that I've driven, that I'm driving through all platforms, but that'll relatively be set. And I'm like, okay, I know that every conversion that I'm driving through my social shopping channels is going to represent like 35% cost of revenue, just as an example. And I'm pretty comfortable proceeding there. So I, my overall hypothesis is that we're going to see that launched by Instagram and YouTube fairly soon, like in the next year or two. And I think that where that shifts brands' attention is to get that underpriced attention, we're going to need to get really good at partnering with creators. Creator, like the ability to create videos in partnership with those creators where they're, you're distributing out your ads creation mechanism. And effectively, instead of throwing money into a Facebook Meta administered bid auction to show ads to users, we're going to see a world where it's more it's more collaborative with creators, and there will likely be a marketplace where brands are showing up and created, but the people who are really good at partnering with creators on content and driving conversions out of that content, those are the ones that are going to perform best.
I mean, the next step of doing that is
my cat's joining us. We're both a little distracted. Hello.
The next step of that is like, I mean, that's kind of what, I mean, let's be honest, that's what I'm doing with Bupos.
Right.
I mean, and I think a lot of that is the sponsor, the product, the service being, saying, hey, like, they've given us a lot of liberty to be like, hey, we like your stuff. We try, I know you, they only saw one or two episodes, but they're like, we like you guys, you have a good reputation. We want to see what you can do.
So you've got your business, but you're also a creator in this business brokering space. So that's exactly right. So imagine, like, I don't know, there's a world where YouTube, someone's watching this on YouTube, and they sign up for Bupos through this video, and then you're getting a cut of that, whatever transactions end up happening, because that's tied back to you and it's all native shopping within the platform.
100%.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, they've given us the liberty to, I mean, even the collab posts on Instagram and the clips, like, they're like, we like it all.
So I'm those like, cool. collab posts are the beginning of, that's the mechanic, that's the mechanism of those platforms coming out with the ability for some e-commerce brand to partner up with a creator and amplify their reach, because these platforms know that businesses are going to be willing to pay to kind of be associated with those creators. Their their reach is being degraded, but creators' reach is being amplified. So businesses are going to need to reach consumers via creators rather than by paying the auction to reach consumers through this, through the Meta kind of like
ad
platform exclusively.
I think it's a very interesting time exactly for that. And I also think like taking when creators and when content creators who are very big and have a lot of reach and really can convert, when they realize how much power they have, they're going and creating their own brands. Like,
yes,
I think we're in the era of creator brands now. Yeah. Like Nick Bear, B-A-R-E, like with his BPN, he's a supplement brand, which every fitness dude has a and fitness girl has a supplement brand. But his one does really well. And he's got a big brand, and I think more than him just having a following is he's telling a story, and people are like going along with that story. They're like, "Well, you're doing this, and I would, you know, following your story, following the founder's story, I want to support that."
Yeah,
I mean that's the kind of thing with Gymshark. Like everything I have gym-wise is Gymshark because I'm like, well, I know the story of the guy.
Yeah,
and I kind of like that ethos and how he came up from nothing and blah blah blah. So I'm like.
And that's you following the founder story.
Yeah.
And then there are other people who Gymshark did a really great job of, like, writ large, kind of harnessing the power of fitness creators.
Yeah, I mean, they have so many Gymshark-sponsored people. Like, so many people are sponsored by Gymshark.
Yeah.
And you're like, I see it everywhere, everywhere, everywhere. And also, their clothes and their designs are quality. Like, Nike doesn't have, and Adidas don't have the cool designs that they have. They simply don't. There's nothing special about the designs, but it's up to date.
Yeah.
You know, like, Greece is always 10 years behind. And I'm only, or usually the only one wearing Gymshark. I'm like, I'm looking at what they're wearing. I'm like, I wore that 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. I'm like, these are all old designs. I'm wearing Gymshark. I'm like, this is what people are wearing here in the UK, in America. But they're doing a lot of things right. And I think to link what I've been doing in this last 2 months, last time we chatted, we were having tacos at a Peruvian place.
Yeah.
And he gave me some advice about one relationships, which didn't go well the way I wanted to, but it was good for me. And the other stuff was to just double down on content and being myself, because I kind of separated my business content, my comedy content, and my other fascinations very distinctly. And then I was like, yeah, I should do that. And I was like planning how I was going to do it. Then I went and saw my good friend, Joel Kaplan, in Denver. Yes. And we did a podcast there and some content and stuff. And then he said the same thing. I'm like, two people I respect are saying this. I should probably do it.
Rather think about it.
Yeah. And then I was like, okay, well, I'm going to move to Athens now for 6 months, double down on content since, like we said, it's a slow time for M&A. It's a slow time for e-com. And I've seen so many ups and downs in 13 years of selling online assets. I know these down periods are a lot of what you got to do is just stay in the game.
Yeah.
Don't like have crazy expenses that makes you go bankrupt.
Yeah.
And, you know, leave brokering because that's what happened to like almost everyone except for the people who are still alive.
Which is by the way, advice for any young guns listening, just stay in the game. Listen just to George there. That is truly the entire name of the game is when you're like, oh, I don't know if I can do this. I'm going to switch to some other industry. Just try to try to stay in the lane that you picked for yourself and you'll naturally find your way.
Honestly, that's, I mean, you need a period of shiny object syndrome where you jump from project to project, but at some point you got to be like, hey, if I don't stick to something, it's going to be bad. I remember like at my video marketing agency where we were doing videos for real estate agents of like the homes or shopping centers, editing the whole thing, making it for ads, different types of ads, and then running the campaigns for them.
Yeah.
And we had a good, you know, Rolodex of clients, and I'm like, nah, this ain't it.
Yeah.
Sold the client list. And
but those skills were transferable.
Yeah, definitely. And my mentor was Rowan. He was like, dude, again?
Yeah.
You're changing again? This is finally working. You've worked so long for this to finally work, and now you're just going to jump? I'm like, yeah. And I kind of regretted it, but it did bring me to go full-time with e-commerce brokers, which eventually, like, because really, it only really works when you start making more than you would have with that other thing or that other career as an investment bank or whatever. And that would have been 10 years since I sold my first online asset to when I started making proper money from e-commerce brokers, 10 years.
Yeah.
I was like, that would have been so easy to give up.
But now if you're looking at agency assets, for example, you are someone who might say, okay, I'm looking at this agency deal because I've got this brokering background, I've now got deal flow, but maybe you'd consider becoming a partner in an agent. Like when you're looking at an acquisition and you're like, actually, I know a lot about how a video agency for real estate works. So you could parlay your fee into being an equity holder and advisor to something which could.
Well, that's honestly something I've thought about for a long time. Because like me, the last two or three months I've had like, we had a very good Q1 and Q2 for e-commerce brokers. And then I know it's a slow period. I'm like, and I hate the feeling that I can be doing more work,
right?
But I got nothing productive to really do.
Sure.
Like for e-commerce brokers right now, I think in the M&A industry, there's nothing to be done. You can't force more deals. You can't run a bunch of ads. That's going to bring it. It's just, nothing's going to really change. You'll get some, but it's like Pareto rule basically. But I know content is something that you can just stack up and that's going to help down the road when things get busy again, which hopefully is Q1, Q2 when interest rates come back down, if they come back down. And, but in the meantime, I'm like, should I do an equity move with some agencies? Right. I know that world very well. And even like with my editors, my content team, I'm like, this is going really well.
Right.
So like, why don't I just kind of expand to bring in some other creators and do this with them? And it's also a high leverage business. Like I realized how much content. So on this note, I was in Athens. I'm like, okay, you know, I'm going to centralize all my comedy, everything, all the kind of content I do. And I made one Instagram reel. I started a separate podcast, another podcast, two podcasts now.
Oh, you're cheating on me.
Yeah. But it's just me alone, solo. And just called Gringlish. That's what we say when someone's speaking like half Greek, half English. And it's just me going through any sort of stuff I find interesting, whether it's history, business, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Stuff happening in Greece.
Yeah.
And
it's a good podcast to do without me.
Yeah. You'd be like, dude. But one of the things that one of my editors was like, dude, you should do a Roman Emperor tier list. Super nerdy shit. Yeah. And it took like 40 minutes because there's 180 emperors.
Yeah.
But I love history, so I know each one. I know where to rank them. And one 40 second reel of that was taken, and we put it on. I created a separate Instagram called George Moulos Greek.
Okay. And, right, that's what we talked about.
Yeah, and these reels. So that reel got 61,000 views.
Holy shit, okay.
And then, now it's time. 175 comments, 50, like, just crazy.
Good for you, man.
And so this was started, so you've got 800 followers now.
Yeah.
And then we're like, if that's just talking about one Roman Emperor, we should do a Roman Emperor every single day. And so, from Augustus.
Yeah.
So I've been using like I honestly couldn't care less. Just using that like viral loops, like, because so I've seen so
yeah. Oh, you're doing the same
Smart. Kind of the same shtick.
Yeah.
And so each one of these is getting like between, I don't know, 2,000, 15,000, 11,000, 5,000, 10,000. And so I'm doing a Roman Emperor every single day for 180 days.
Okay.
And so I'm saying it in English, putting subtitles in Greek. So I'm getting a Greek
audience
or Greek affiliated audience. Sure. So a lot of them actually, it says location, New York and Sydney and Melbourne, where there's a shit ton of Greeks.
Yeah.
And which is exactly what we were kind of saying, like, hey, you know, if you want to niche down to being the e-com guy or the entrepreneur guy or the history guy or the guy in Greece or in the Greek world.
Just go for your unfair advantage.
Yeah. And like, now, like I was speaking to, so we're talking to sponsors now, and they're like, what's your reach? Like, how many people are seeing your stuff? And it's like, in the last month, 78,000 people. So I was talking to this famous history museum in Copenhagen.
Yeah.
Because I was dating a Danish girl. Okay. She's like, I know an opera guy who runs an opera. He knows this famous Roman museum in Denmark.
Okay.
Maybe you can get sponsored by them if you can talk about the emperors. And they have those kind of statues. Okay. I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
He's like, what reach you have? I'm like, well, we started a month ago. And we have 78,000, whatever it is. And we're not even up to, you know, a full month. I think we're up to day 20 today or 21. And they're like, all right, we'll sponsor that. I'm like,
amazing.
What?
Yeah.
And it kind of makes me upset because I'm like, I've always loved history.
Yeah.
And now I study stuff.
Yeah. But you got to put everything together. Yeah. I mean, you had to stay in the game. You would have never learned that was something that you should, and how to structure your videos. Like, you had a very specific strategy that you were showing me just there.
Yeah, exactly.
So you wouldn't have known that. And if you had started it earlier, if you weren't getting the results or you didn't know what you were doing at all, you might have given it up earlier.
100%.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I mean, it's such a journey, this entrepreneurship thing, but it also just comes down to like attention. If you know how to grab attention, like I'm giving them what they want with a stupid reel at the start, and then give them what they need, which is like, I think is like learning about a Roman emperor,
right, for example. In an entertaining way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, that's gone very well. And for me, I'm like, and we chatted about this. You're like, what do you want? I'm like, well, in Greece and Cyprus, like, I would love to potentially have the option of going into politics, maybe even.
Right.
Now, in these last 2 months in Cyprus, this is before we even chatted about this, a kid who's like the Mr. Beast of Cyprus.
Okay.
Who's like, he became famous because he wanted to hug Elon Musk.
Okay.
And he's 24, is a bit of a Fruit Loop in terms of just like loud and obnoxious.
Yeah.
And then so he pretty much harassed Elon Musk's mum. Say, get me a meeting with Elon Musk.
Okay.
And she literally said he harassed me.
Yeah.
And Elon Musk eventually hugged the kid, put it on Twitter, and he blew up.
Okay.
Right? He went to Japan, and anyway, so he blew up. And then he's like, he announced his bid to run for the EU Parliament in Cyprus. Cyprus only has 6 seats because it's like 700,000 people.
Right.
He won. He got more votes than lifetime politicians. He got 20% of the votes. Everyone else got like 15,
just got 10. Attention.
Yeah, and he just ran, like, he did a run across the country, which is what I am going to do, but Greece, so much harder. And he did it across Cyprus. Yeah. It was only 80K. But he did a lot of stuff like this, just marketing stunts. And he got more votes than anyone else. He's got 100K salary now. He can spend another 100K on his team. He's killing it.
Good for him.
Yeah. No, it was like he's led the way, especially in Greece and Cyprus, where it's such an old world, everyone hates politicians. So you got the fuck you vote, like, we don't want to vote for politicians.
Yeah, we're going
to vote for this idiot kid, at least it's against the system.
Yeah.
And Greece is super, super divided between left and right.
Okay.
And you got both sides, because they're both like, we don't care about left and right, we don't care about...
It's just against this guy the system. Entertainers.
Yeah. But yeah, it's like, so me just doubling down on content, on my own podcast, our podcast, history stuff, comedy stuff, memes and stuff. Like, so on the meme front, so I was just looking at what was going viral in Greek meme world, right? Okay. And I was taking a look around, and there was a lot of there's a lot of Greek meme pages, right? So this is just a Greek, but in English, right? Meme pages, 400,000, let's call it, views and stuff, followers. And then so I created this reel by finding a bunch of clips and then doing like a reaction to them, basically. Let me try and find it, see how many views it has. And here it is. So 192,000 views.
So these guys reposted yours?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which they didn't tag me in, but fine.
Jerks.
Just a reaction. Seriously, I didn't even say a word.
Fantastic.
But for the comedy stuff, it's like people found this funny, they're going to find me funny probably.
Right.
And now I'm starting to see how this stuff, how
it works.
Content creators start, you know? This comedy push, content push, taking, you know, this podcast into consideration as well. I think this is how content creators start. One, it is actually a shit ton of work.
It's so much work.
So much
work. That's why I don't really do it. Like, your team handles all the editing. The reason I like doing this stuff is I just get to show
sit
up.
Down.
I just get to show up and talk about e-commerce, but...
I didn't realize, but, like, every morning now, before I even get out of bed, I have to post, like, that Roman Emperor's reel a day. And then Tuesdays and Thursdays, I'm filming, like, 3 or 4 hours straight.
Yeah.
And then I've got to research and script, so I think now I'm gonna hire a script writer, buy a teleprompter so I can read the things and clips and
but
stuff.
But I think, and bringing it full circle, I think that's why, like, it's work to be able to generate that attention. I think that's why, that's creating quite a lot of value.
Yeah.
And I think that's why, ultimately, 100%. Brands are going to have to now, like, those brands have created value by producing intellectual property in the form of products and distribution systems and customer service systems and all that. And so now they get to partner with creators who have put in the work to get the attention, like you have, like many other creators have. But it's work. You can't just like.
But I also compare it. I'm like, because myself and someone like you and pretty much anyone with an internet connection, we have the privilege of creating any business. Because we have the internet, we have a laptop or a computer.
Yeah.
So what business do you want? For me, right now, I want a business that I can run from anywhere so that I can be based in Cyprus and get low taxes, basically. Mm-hmm. And I can... So it's not a retail place. It's not fixed anywhere. So I can run from Cyprus. And also, I can be anywhere.
Yeah.
And then also, it can scale to the moon. Like, one of my stupid videos, whether you've got 20 views, like some do,
mm-hmm.
or 192,000 views, like that one did,
yeah,
it doesn't cost me a dime more.
Right.
Like, sometimes I just think about that, like... There's this, do you know Oakberry, the acai place?
Yes.
So Greek, Brazilian dude owns that.
Okay.
And I chat with him and I'm looking at that business board. I'm like, he raised a bunch of money. I'm like, he won the acai game.
Yeah.
Like, that was a fat dude. He won it. And I'm like, that's not very scalable though. I mean, it's a retail place. It's a franchise. It's one by one by one. They scaled up.
Okay.
But like, that's a lot of effort. There's a lot of work there.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could do that, I probably would. But like, if I can compare that to making a shit ton of content, I'd rather just make content.
Right, that's in your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
But if you knew all of like the op systems that go into creating a franchisable... But even like
the margins on that compared to the margins on content. You have your own, if you have like, most content, the biggest content creators, they're selling their own products.
Yep.
They are making ad revenue and sponsorships on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like their profit margins, I would expect to be far higher than 50%.
Yeah.
Probably 60, 70%. And they're building equity in their own products and their own brands that they're selling, like, not to mention Prime with like KSI and stuff like that. Like, for me now, I'm kind of thinking like, this is the best business I can start right now. This is content push, content move.
Well, I think it comes back to like, you have the people who are really good at creating product. You have people who are really good at creating attention.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, then they're rarefied air, like, Elon Musk is good at creating product and attention. Figured that out pretty early on and has been playing that game for a long time. And if you can do both of those things, obviously the multiplicative effect is pretty meaningful. So if you're in that space, you're good at creating product, your broker business product, you're going to have other products, I'm sure, and you get good at creating attention. Both of those things, either of those things on their own can be a career, can be rewarding in itself.
Yeah.
But if you can have those things working together, so you've got a profitable product, the intellectual property that goes into that business system, and you've got an engine that generates attention, those things now pointed at one another can produce incredible, incredible results.
No, I'm pretty excited about it.
That's exciting, dude. You've been busy. You've been working.
I've been busy making content. I think, and honestly, on the flight over here, which I had like a 4-hour delay, so I was on the plane for like 8 hours.
Yeah.
I just run my
leg was on the plane.
Yeah, I was on it for 4 hours.
You didn't even get to chill in the lounge. Terrible.
But the whole time I'm like, I should hire more script writers. And like, even though, so the Gringlish podcast, my own podcast I do solo, I'll talk about things that are happening in the Greek news. And so some of those things, like, for example, Greece instituted a 6-day work week for some
days. Yeah, right.
So that video got 700 views on its own, just from SEO. This one I'm talked about is a Greek arms dealer from 100 years ago, 400 views. I talked about a big infrastructure project called Elenicon, about 1,000 views.
Yeah.
Like, and I haven't been trying. I didn't even make it specific to each thing. So it wasn't really written well. It was just me ranting. But I'm like, you do it right. You write it well, especially if you make it as a reel. You tag a few news platforms. I'm like, I think I'm learning pretty quickly how to grab that attention.
And so talk to me a little bit about, you make this video on the arms dealer.
Yeah.
It gets a couple hundred views, but you still have like hard costs associated with that, right? Like you have the editing cost and all that. How do you sort of think about, is that just like, you know, that you have to take the shots on goal and there's a fixed cost to kind of get the followership to a point that it gets more broadly monetized? So you're thinking of it like, I'm going to invest money. Like,
exactly.
So it's actually good that you have a business that's generating revenue outside of it, because that business is generating money that you can then invest into the content that doesn't make money out of the gates, but the only way to get better at the content is to just get reps at the plate.
Exactly. To do the work. That's exactly my mentality.
Yeah.
And I honestly don't think it's going to take that long to get even small sponsors.
Probably.
Because, and at the same time, I've taken a look at, you can get referral links and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Start making some money. But if it's not a brand I actually like, it's just too cheap.
Right.
Right. We are taking a look at a Bupos listing from their marketplace. This is an Amazon FBA brand.
Okay.
In the kids' school handbag. School bag niche.
School bag. So it's making about 20% net. So yeah. Pretty good for an Amazon brand.
Yeah.
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 By the way, next tip, kids, stay hydrated.
Sponsored by water.
Sponsored by water.
So, yeah, asking price, 3.7 mil, rev 4.9, profit 1 mil, basically.
Yep.
So, it's coming from a broker, which I haven't necessarily heard of, to be honest.
Yep.
Let's take a look at some of the insights that the marketplace has. So, first things first, pretty August heavy, I assume that's
Well, that's seasonality. Yeah. School starts in September, so... That's you're basically looking at a deeply seasonal business that ramps up right around back to school time.
Yeah. I mean, they've been around for, I think they said, I mean, looking, okay. Yeah, so at least 2 years. If it's 2 years old, that's crazy growth. Yeah, okay. Well, and that's, I've never heard of that niche before, to be honest. Like, school bag niche?
Yeah, I mean, it's good for them. You're really going to have to be looking at a lot of, like, financing your inventory because there's seasonality. Becomes interesting to me is, like, what's the differentiator? Like, why? Yeah. They're clearly making very strong product margins. Bags are great. They're not too heavy. They can be a little bit bulky, but for most bags, assuming it's not, like, a crazy premium material, it's likely that... It's something that's foldable, so you can get it into fairly tight packaging. So that could be, those like Fjall Robin. Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce that brand.
Me neither.
That one, it's canvas, right? So you can fold it up. So I'm assuming that this is something canvas. So it shows really good revenue during back to school. So whoever's buying this is just going to need to be able to finance the inventory hold because you need to purchase inventory kind of probably at least around like March, April. It's likely made overseas. Maybe it's made in China. Like February is when Chinese New Year happens. So you've got to get your POs in time. That stuff is coming in. Clearly, like it starts taking off in July, right? So you want your inventory leaving overseas by April. So likely, you're placing your POs in January. It's leaving China around April, it's getting into your warehouse around June, everything's settled, you go absolutely bonkers, July, August, not bonkers in September, but you're still selling in September. And then it kind of goes back to low. I'm curious around who's buying these bags. They're doing decent revenue, not in the back to school period. So I guess that's just people whose bags break, need replacements, whatever.
Latecomers.
Yeah, latecomers. You need bags, whatever. Bags break. This is the detail we have, eh?
Yeah, didn't get too much, but look, I think they listed in February 27, so they've been on the market for some time.
It's been on the market, so there's definitely, that's a major piece of consideration. Like it's been on the market for a really long time. If it was that attractive, like these things get scooped up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So there's likely some skeletons in the closet. Mm-hmm. It's also just been on the market so long that you probably want it reevaluated. I think I saw somewhere, was it in Business Insights? It said the evaluation was in November 2022. So this has been getting shopped or workshopped for quite a long time. Even these numbers, like those sales numbers are from... That's November 2022. So you're looking at numbers that are, even this chart we're looking at is from 2022. You and I are sitting here in 2024. Numbers. So I'd want to see like way updated numbers.
This is also the type of brand a aggregator would love back in the day. If the designs were reasonably unique.
Yeah.
Because it's huge. It's a big brand. I mean, what's the profit number?
They're doing like just over a million profit.
Yeah. I mean, everyone just heard 1 million EBITDA. They're like, we'll buy it.
Yeah.
So,
now that economy doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
But I definitely, it piques my interest enough that I'd certainly want to be looking at a P&L and understanding what's going on. I definitely want
multiple all the updated numbers. Multiple's a bit high, but...
The multiple is, likely high for something so seasonal. Mm. I worry a little bit about defensibility. Like, it's tough to have defensible intellectual property in the bag space, unless they've got... Because you go back to your patents, you've got design and utility patents. Unless they've got some sort of utility patent, as in a function on the bag that they've locked down a patent for, that makes it so that no one can come in and yoink that utility. If they've just got a design patent, you can change something very small about a bag. Get around the design patent.
Speaking of bags, I had a mom's handbag business. He just had like some extra pockets and zips and stuff.
Yeah,
they made it easy for like baby wipes and stuff.
Great.
And this seller added these changes to the design.
Yeah,
and it had just enough defensibility because of those changing designs and her consistent change of designs with new products that a buyer found it interesting enough to buy.
Right.
But no utility patent. Like,
yeah, those are tough. Like, they're tough to get. They're tough to defend. They're expensive to maintain, so overall... Like,
this niche also, in this niche, I went to a school where backpacks were sold by the school.
Okay.
I also wonder if they do any B2B, like selling like 700 bags with your logo.
Yeah.
Considering it's Amazon, probably not, I would assume. Right,
and if they don't, if you're someone who does have B2B connections, that's how you could further monetize it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just becomes interesting, like your... I guess it would freak me out a little bit as your one season. You have all of this time. You have an entire year's cycle for something to change on the Amazon algorithm.
Yeah.
And now you don't have your big selling season. And this business goes from, maybe a reasonable acquisition at 3.5-ish times profit, right, as an acquisition. Like, I can remotely get my head around that. But the feedback cycle on if this is going to be a profitable acquisition is a really long one because of the seasonality.
The other thing I was going to say is I didn't know what this... I thought that was Q4.
Yeah.
Because in my head, I'm still in Australia.
Right.
Our back to school is February.
Oh, shit.
Because it's summer, winter.
Right, yeah.
Like, we have summer holidays where that's a big 6-7 weeks.
Okay.
So, like, this could look like... So if they had a big Australia operations too, it'd be big January, like there'd be one peak here, at least 2 peaks.
Right.
Right. Even things out. I mean, it could be Australia, New Zealand, and then North America.
Yep.
To even things out. But
Amazon's not as big in Australia. And right now this is an Amazon FBA business, which almost immediately indicates to me it's almost certainly a North America focused brand. 100%.
Yeah.
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 Cool. All right. Well, that's an interesting
one. Thank you, Bupos, for the listing.
Yeah. I've never seen a school. I've seen a lot of businesses.
I've never seen
a school backpack business. So that one's super interesting. Our next listing comes from Website Closers. And this one is Revenue Optimization Agency, proprietary subscription platform for large e-com brands. 2 million customer LTV, low churn. We'll see about that.
So it's an agency. It's not a brand.
Yeah.
We're looking at an agency.
Yeah.
Okay.
Trend Towards is 15% over 2023.
All right. So what are they claiming? Because I get a lot of agencies reaching out to me. So this is interesting. So the Revenue Optimization Agency, that's interesting. What does that mean? Increasing sales and maximizing ROI on each customer by adding a subscription platform. So they're like, they're implementing subscriptions, which you can do. There's tons of, I guess, platforms to do this with. Like, you can take Loop subscriptions and plug that into your Shopify store and implement this. So I'm assuming that these guys are saying that they can do it better.
Mm.
So personally,
really just implementing.
They're implementing
is what they're doing.
I believe increase sales and maximize ROI by adding
AOV subscriptions. Of 60K, LTV of 2 mil per client. These numbers, I feel like, are very round, and I really want to understand what they mean.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as a repeat customer rate of 100%. They've never lost a client since the day they started.
Essentially work with repeat orders. Yeah, this is sort of, this language is like blending.
Exactly, yeah.
How a brand would be marketed on one of these broker websites with, so an AOV of roughly 60,000, does that mean it's 60,000 that they charge for an implementation. I imagine if I'm creating an agency that implements subscription platforms on D2C websites, I'm probably charging an implementation fee and then some percent of the ongoing subscription until the brand figures out that they can do this themselves. An average lifetime customer value of 2 million. So that this really begs the question to me, like, are we talking the fees that this agency is receiving, or are they talking about like GMV? Are they talking about like the amount of revenue that they process?
Exactly. It has to be, because if we go down to their numbers, they're big, but I mean, they're pretty damn big.
Gross income. So gross income is what this platform's calling revenue, right? And their cash flow. Yeah. So they're basically, they established in 2021. Not so many, the employees must be the bulk of the cost, and it looks like about an 800,000 cost. So this employee cost is not very high per head.
Wild multiple.
It is a crazy multiple for an agency. It looks almost more like software.
Yeah. Well, let's keep going through, because I think what people are going to find very interesting about this is how we look at a normal public information listing and break it down. And what does it mean? Because the language they're using, like 60K OV, is 60K, not 61K, $514. Yeah. 60K.
They're just
random. 2 mil LTV. Please. Yep. It's not 2 mil. There's a number.
Because it couldn't be 2 mil per client. That would mean that they've got like 1.5 clients.
Exactly.
So that doesn't make sense based on the revenue.
Yeah.
So that might be modeled. That might be an estimate. Yeah. Okay, so here we go. We're getting into more details here. The agency's custom-built checkout process. So they're implementing, and they're saying that they've built their own checkout process, boasts a 60% conversion rate. So they're alleging that they're better at getting customers to opt in to a brand's subscription option than just a native implementation that the brand does themselves. The partner's customers typically stay subscribed. Okay, so they're calling the brands our partners, and they stay subscribed for the customers that they manage to get subscribed for their brands stick around for an average of 5 months. And the partners themselves enjoy. Okay, so they're implementing subscriptions with AOVs of 31 to 34. That doesn't make sense. Like, is this proprietary services? Because what I sell is a subscription. If I wanted to add a subscription to my razor business, which is kind of the whole point of my razor business, is that we're getting people away from needing to subscribe by buying like a buy it for life type razor. But the way that they're framing this, it almost sounds to me like there's maybe some common subscription that they're offering like across a bunch of brands. Because the subscription that every brand should offer is typically different. It's going to be different for my razor business versus a subscription, versus a supplement company versus, you know, like a direct-to-consumer, like food delivery company. Return themselves by turning one-time sales into long-term revenue streams. Okay, this is now they're just talking a bunch of jargon, maximizing ROAS and, of course, blah, blah, blah. Word of mouth, so they're saying that current brands that they work with are referring other brands because they're doing such a great job. They regularly attend trade shows. Okay, so that's really expensive. So that must be eating into a major part of this cash flow piece, right? Because again, we're saying they make this much in revenue, they make this much in profit. That's what this platform is calling profit, is cash flow. And they've got 11 employees. So I don't know, they must be... That's how they're growing, is spending going to trade shows. So a buyer, by the way, would probably have to keep going to those trade shows.
Oh yeah, definitely. Right? Someone has to be going.
And then they've got affiliate contracts. That's the first thing
buyers don't do anymore, is trade shows.
Trade shows.
Then they wonder why.
That's how I grew all of Rockwell, my shaving company's wholesale contracts at the beginning. So I just showed up to trade shows. And that's like one of the most profitable channels for that company. Investing in LinkedIn content. Okay, so there's a lot of marketing activity that's happening for this agency. Current ownership spends 30 hours per week, blah, blah, blah. There's opportunities to scale it. So yeah, it's not clear to me. Like, I'm curious, are they implementing their own proprietary technology. It sounds like they've got a POV that their implementation on the checkout is better than just like a native implementation.
Yeah, it sounds but like they're using someone else's software and then they have their own piece.
Yeah, so are they doing like Recharge? Maybe they're a Recharge partner, maybe they're a Loop partner. I don't know. But it sounds like, they're implementing some other subscription software onto e-commerce sites. They're alleging that they're better at implementing it than others. They also show up to trade shows. They've got affiliate partnerships with e-commerce communities. So someone has carved out a really great, like, little piece of service business. They're looking to get out. Can't, you know, don't hate the player. And they're looking for a pretty
healthy multiple. I do hate that figure, though.
Yeah.
So their numbers are, they're looking, the asking price is $11.5 million. Cash flow, net profit or EBITDA, $2,336,000. Gross income, which I would call revenue, is $3,146,000. And the business is 3 years old, have 11 employees. $11
million. $11
million. Preposterous.
And you're going to have to maintain all of those affiliate relationships. You're going to maintain or grow and grow.
Yeah.
You're going to have to figure out how to scale the trade shows. And then you're going to have to execute on not only these scale opportunities listed here, but you're going to have to maintain a fairly aggressive sales organization to find brands that you have to talk brands into implementing subscription, presumably come up with a strategy on what they should offer as a subscription, right? So you actually have to have fairly meaningful knowledge on e-commerce strategy for this to be an attractive buy. Although I don't know any world where I'd find that price attractive. You are buying a job.
Yeah.
You are buying a job. Maybe you can grow it, but that's a really big price to pay to buy a
job.
Who
has access to 11.5 mil that would want to do that? I don't know a single buyer.
Yeah.
I don't know PE
firms. You'd know that world better than me, but
I don't know family offices. I don't know rich individuals.
If I had 11.5 million liquid kicking around, I'm not certain that I would be looking to buy a sales job for myself.
Exactly. And especially when most likely they aren't selling their own software.
No.
At least all of their own software.
Yeah. This deal freaks me the fuck out.
I think what is probably the story behind this, like I kind of always say, you want to find out the story behind a sale is, agency guy, any agency dude, because most agency owners are dudes,
sure,
like me, they're like, oh, I'm making $2 million a year.
Yeah.
I only sell for 11.5. And the broker's like, no one's going to buy for that.
Right.
He's like, well, I'm only going to sell 11.5. I'm like, as a broker, you're like, we'll list it for that. When we get no interest, we bring it down. He goes, okay.
No.
So they have to listen to the preposterous price that the seller wants. And then eventually when he gets exhausted, he goes, I'll sell it for
four. I'll just take it out of my hands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting one. I wanted to put an agency in here because we're selling a lot of agencies.